afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of House Finance to order. It's a little bit later than 1:30. In fact, it's 3:02 p.m. in the afternoon. Today, we are going to be looking at budget overviews, and people are late coming from the floor, but we're going to go ahead and start. And Representative Ortiz is here, Co-Chair Foster, and myself, Chair Seaton. We'll recognize other people as they come in. Let me remind people about their cell phones. And today we'll hear our final department budget overviews from the Department of Fish and Game, Commerce, Community, Economic Development, and Department of Law. So if the commissioner would come forward and any other people that you wish bring with you. And so we would like to keep this to no more than half an hour. This is a fairly high level budget overview, and I know you have another meeting you have to attend to, so if you can introduce the budget and the people will explain that quickly, and then we will accept your departure. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate your flexibility there. Today we'll give a overview of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game budget. I'm joined today by Carol Petreborg, who's the Administrative Services Director and our lead on the budget, as well as Morgan Foss, who's our legislative liaison, and will also assist in responding to questions that the committee might have regarding our budget or anything else within the department that you'd like to have responses.
And before you go on, I want to recognize Vice Chair Guerra has joined us, and would you introduce yourself for the record?
I'm sorry, yeah, Sam Cotton, Commissioner, Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And as often is the case, there are sometimes questions from members of a committee that deal with statistics or other detailed information that we may or may not have at our fingertips, but we'll keep careful note of any questions that come up, and Morgan will deliver responses to the chair and anybody else in writing in response to the questions you might have.
Thank you, and we have been joined by Representative Kawasaki as well.
So if I could, would you like me to begin?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll just start, and I do have to run, but Carol will be able to go through the actual budgeting numbers. I'll just start with our mission and our guidance from the Constitution and from the statutes, and I'm sure you're well aware of Article 8 that also gives the legislature direction on how to manage fish and game resources in this state. Section 1 of Article 8 deals with policy, and it's to develop resources, maximum use consistent with the public interest. And when you think about public interest, there's a lot of things that you can consider there. But one of the main things is that's mentioned other places in the Constitution has to do with conservation. So we're very cognizant of that. Section 2 describes the legislature's requirements as far as natural resource development is concerned. And here the term maximum benefit of its people is used. And finally, in Section 4 on the sustained yield section, it's often been misquoted, and people suggest that the Constitution requires that resources development at maximum sustained yield, but that word doesn't actually appear in the Constitution. Maximum appears a couple other places, but the sustained yield principle is what guides us, and of course that means don't harvest more this year than what can be regenerated in following years. Our core services are, again, I'm sure you're well aware of these: management, stock assessment and research, and customer service and public involvement. And the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is probably the largest science organization in Alaska, and we take a lot of pride in the professional staff that we have. A lot of people that work for our department stay for 30-plus years. They're scientists, wildlife managers, biologists, geneticists, just a wide range of science that, again, we're very proud of the quality of the people we have, and thankful that they've decided that that's what they want to do with their lives, is work for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And before you go further, we've been joined by Representative Thompson and Representative Pruitt.
And finally, I think worthy of note is the public involvement that the legislature and the department have set up with the Board of Fish, Board of Game, the advisory committees, We're told that we're unlike any other state as far as a regulatory process that involves the public. And I can tell you, I was just in Sitka for most of about a two-week meeting that if people that were interested, members of the public were interested in participating in that, they had ample chance, and believe me, they took advantage of that chance. And the board and the department enjoys a lot of benefits from the local knowledge and the input from the public. If you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, I'll just talk briefly about this next slide here, and then I'm gonna depart. This shows our general fund dollars, a history since fiscal year 09. And if you could look at the very bottom print here, it shows that of the general fund dollars that the state of Alaska spends, 1.4% of those dollars are spent at the Department of Fish and Game. So again, appreciate your flexibility. Let me leave at this point, and Carol and Ab Morgan will be here as well to make sure that your questions are answered if we're not able to at this meeting.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Guttenberg joined us, and was there a quick question for the commissioner? Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Cotton, thanks for being here today. And yes, I just heard this presentation, but my question that I did not bring up the other day that I wanted to at least put on the record, because the division is, you know, concerned about fish habitat and protection of fish habitat, do we have a presence on the I guess it's the wrong term, but are we involved in the discussions around transboundary mining and those issues? Does Fish and Game have a representative that attends those joint meetings between our Alaskan government and the BC government?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ortiz, the answer is yes. I have participated personally in a lot of those meetings and discussions, and our Director of Habitat, Mr. David Rogers, is a constant presence at those meetings. We've had some field trips that were pretty exciting up the Taku River, for example, with the Minister of Mines from British Columbia to examine at least the Tulsiqua Chief Mine that the Minister of Mines from British Columbia was very surprised to see a pipe coming out of the old mine shaft there, spewing pretty ugly-looking water. So the answer is yes, we're directly involved.
Thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you.
And we've been joined by Representative Tilton, and would you go ahead and put yourself on the record and go ahead and proceed with me?
Okay. Carol Petroborg, Admin Services Director for the Department of Fish and Game. And on this next slide, this is, again, our department budget broken out by budget line item. Our largest budget line item is personal services, and it's at 61%, followed by our contractual at 31% of our budget. So over 90% of our budget is personal services and contractual, which half of the contractual is for our core services to other state agencies. This next slide is by appropriation, general funds only. There's these comments on here. As you can see, the top line is our commercial fisheries division, and the bottom three is wildlife, sport fish, and statewide services, which the bottom three are trended down and then flat between 18 and 19. The only thing with commercial fisheries that looked like there is a bump up in FY18, and that was due to, we had amendments by Representative Ortiz for last year, and also we used to have a component for facilities rents within the statewide support services component that we allocated out to the division so that the expenditures can be reflected in the appropriate appropriation. This next slide is all funds. And it's trending down a little bit there. Over the last few years, we have reduced our funding that, call it empty funding, unrealized or uncollectible funding sources. So that's the majority of that trend down on that. This is a, just to give you a visual on where our offices, our regional offices and area offices are located throughout the state and what divisions are in those offices. Now these next several slides are divisions broken out by program. These first two slides are the Commercial Fisheries Division. And the easiest way, we typically don't budget by program because we have a regional structure, but we did break this out by species. That was the, we felt the best way to depict their programs. And so those are commercial fisheries. And then we have the Sport Fish Division, which is also on two slides. And this, these were broken out more by functional areas. And then the Division of Wildlife was also broken out by more functional, and some of those are program specific, like the Threatened, Endangered, and Diversity programs, and then their education and outreach. And the Division of Subsistence, they have two programs, one for the research analysis program and one for actually applying that research. And
again, in these fund codes, have you, you say you have been reducing the hollow authority or the unrealized receipt authority?
Yes, we are. We are getting down to truth in budget. Yes. And admin services, which would be my division, it's broken out by our sections. There's two sections in there that you don't typically find in an administrative services division. That's our licensing section, which is in support of our sport fishing and hunting license sales. We do the administration for the divisions, and also we have consolidated the administration and all the small divisions within the Division of Administrative Services, which includes admin services, habitat, subsistence, boards, and the commissioner's office. And then we have the Division of Habitat for their permitting and compliance, project review and monitoring. And they have a little small federal state wildlife grant. And then the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, which is administratively attached to the Department of Fish and Game, and their allocation is within the commercial fisheries component, but we did separate this out for this purpose. And we have the board support section, which is broken out into it's by their components. And then the Office of the Commissioner. But, and on all those slides, those there are links to additional information under the rating of effectiveness. That those will take you to our performance measures on the OMB website. And also will give you guidance to a lot of other information. So, and with that, we have the healthcare costs. Which we're working with the Department of Health and Social Services on efforts to get that word out. But according to this chart with these numbers that were provided, which are budgeted numbers, it's the percentage of total personal services hasn't really changed that much since 2014. I would have liked to have gotten this by actuals by fund source, but that I couldn't get that information to break out. So these are just budgeted numbers, because when we budget, it doesn't, and what actually happens can be totally different. So.
And the department is a fair amount higher than number of other departments and the percentage of healthcare costs. So during the subcommittee process, I'd like to see if you guys can break that out a little more on Fish and Game compared to other budgets in relationship to the personnel services line.
Absolutely, we can do that for you.
Thank you. And again, our focus there is in avoiding avoidable costs so that we can bend that curve down so it doesn't have to come out of other parts of your budget and eat out your core services. Representative Ortiz, did you have a question at this point?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Carol, we're all aware that the different agencies throughout Alaska state government have been reduced, funding has been reduced. Can you give me a summation as to how Fish and Game has been reduced since FY, how much it's been reduced since FY 2015?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, our unrestricted general fund budget has been reduced by almost 37%.
And with that said, a follow-up, if I may, Mr. Chairman, with that said, is it the position of the department that the reductions are in any way causing a reduced ability for you to fulfill your primary mission?
Ooh. We have been able to do fund source changes for a lot of that unrestricted general fund in the form of we increased our general fund program receipts and commercial fisheries, test fish receipts, which I know is not popular. And we've been able to work with industry to provide additional funding to cover some general fund reductions. Which those funds are not guaranteed, but we have been successful so far. So as long as we can still get those funds, we feel that we are providing our mission critical services.
Okay.
But we are a research agency. And the more we like to do research, because the more research we do, the more information that we gather, we can be more precise in our management.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can you go back to slide 4?
Sure.
Just so everybody, the whole committee is looking at the questionnaire. I think following up on Representative Ortiz's question is not only the difference between 15, the total GF, that's UGF and DGF, unrestricted and designated funds, are lower than they were in 2009 or 2010. So total GF, all funds that way, not all federal funds and everything else, is lower than it was in 2009 and 2010. So that's something that we haven't seen in very many departments. And I'm sure the budget subcommittee will ask about the effectiveness of managing on a sustainable level that isn't so conservative that we're having foregone harvest. And so that would be a question that I hope that the subcommittee will be able to look at as it goes forward. I think Representative Kawasaki was next.
Yes. Can we go to slide 6? And I think this is sort of a similar question, a similar vein. It says that Division of Wildlife Conservation had lost almost 73% of its general fund. And then if you go to slide 7, it looks like the trend is up, an increase of 31%. So it's the difference between slide 6 and slide 7. And so I think you started to mention how you've been able to use receipts. Can you just explain it a little bit more, like what those receipts are? Are they federal dollars, things like that?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki. In the case of wildlife conservation, we have been able to offset general fund reductions with an increase to fish and game funds. with the passage of HB 137, which increased the license fees, that helped tremendously. And to help us, we have Pittman Robertson's funds that we match, and those would be from the sale of guns and ammunition. And our apportionment is at the highest level from the feds. And so we are, so the fish and game funds are, we are matching more federal dollars. So in wildlife, it is federal and fish and game funds.
And then follow up? Thank you, Carol. And in the Pittman Robertson funds, are we up to the max? Or if we had put more money in there, could we capture more federal funds?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, this for the first year we just lapsed almost $1.9 million in federal because we didn't have the match.
And through the chair, and is it a 1-to-1 match? One GF dollar for $1 of Pittman Robertson funds?
It's a 3-to-1. Three federal to one state.
Seems like a deal. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
For the subcommittee to consider. Further questions? Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. The first one is there's an initiative that's out there that would affect you guys, I believe, and that would fall within this fiscal year, the effective date of that. Is there a cost that you guys have been able to quantify if that were to pass and the effect that it would have on your budget?
Through the chair, Representative, I'm not sure what you're speaking to.
The habit, the adronomous fish initiative that is out there that potentially would be on the budget or the on the ballot later on this year.
It's called the Salmon Initiative, is that right?
Something to that effect, the fish initiative.
Is that HB 199?
I think it's the initiative that's very similar to that.
Okay. Yeah, and that would be in our habitat division. I mean, it would increase their budget and also workload. But I would, any further information on that, I would have to get back to you on that.
And Representative Pruitt, maybe if we look at the fiscal note on 199, which is the statutory thing in fish, at least there'll be a...
And Mr. Chair, and my understanding is there are some slight differences in that, which is part of the reason why I'm curious about that. But one other follow-up question as well. And thank you. I would appreciate if you could get me something that would help me understand that. The other question that I have is, and this is just because I want to make sure that we dispel any rumors that are out there, but I've been told that there are people within the Department of Fish and Game that either worked with the initiative sponsors or have worked with them since in putting that together. Is that the case? Because that seems like that would probably be outside of the realm of what our employees should be doing.
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I know nothing of that.
Okay. And just one follow-up on that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pruitt.
As the process goes, or if you guys were to have discovered that someone did or that they are assisting through the initiative process, is that something that you guys allow, or is that something that disciplinary action is usually taken on?
Representative Pruitt, that's not my area of expertise. If there is an employee who is, it would be an HR issue.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pruitt, if you want to submit that to the commissioner, that would probably be the appropriate person to be able to.
I agree. Unfortunately, he had to leave. I had hoped to ask him that question. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for the presentation. And we will, since we're short on time, we'll go right into Commerce, Community, Economic Development. But we will take a minute or so at ease while we change the slide. Welcome back on the record. Welcome, Commissioner Navarro. Would you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed, and we'll try and get through within less than half an hour if we can, but I know it's a lot of stuff to get through.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will try to talk fast. Chairman Seaton, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Mike Navarre. I'm the Commissioner Designee for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. I thank you for this opportunity. I'm joined here by Catherine Reardon, who is the Administrative Services Director for the Department, and also Hannah Lager is here. She's the Budget Manager, both of whom know more about the budget than I do. The Department's mission and core services encompassed in AS 4433020, the Department's mission is to promote a healthy economy, strong communities, and protect consumers in Alaska. And as you'll see as we go through this presentation, our department's very diverse. For example, we license doctors and pawnbrokers and midwives to morticians. So we have cradle to grave in that regard. We train rural residents to maintain local utility systems, and we finance infrastructure projects, often very large, through some of our corporate quasi-government agencies. We loan fishermen money to buy boats and permits, and we work to hold down the cost of health insurance. These department activities are all tied together in that they create the framework for a strong economy, the foundation necessary for economic growth. And if not properly addressed, they can also present obstacles to economic growth. And a couple examples of that are healthcare costs in this state are extraordinarily high, unsustainable, and they affect both public and private sector budgets. And it's something that we are working to address in conjunction with other departments as part of a review of a healthcare authority and other ways that we can combine to try to get a better handle on healthcare costs. Another item is fiscal policy, and I know that you all have struggled with that over the last several years. I'm working on a more detailed presentation. I'd like to come back to the committee and present for a broader discussion on that topic. We accomplish our mission with agencies that support four core services: consumer protection, economic growth, sustainable energy, and strong communities. And on the screen are the links to the department program and budget information that you can find additional detail. Department's made of six core divisions and six corporate entities. Corporate entities are aligned with the department's mission and appear in our budget, and the department provides them with a variety of services, and it varies depending on the different entities, but IT, HR, personnel services. But they're governed by boards appointed by the governor and confirmed by the legislature rather than by the commissioner of the department. This organizational chart shows the divisions in blue and our corporate entities in yellow, and the dotted lines reflect the relationship. Alaska Railroad is also part of our corporate entities, but is exempt from the Budget Act and so doesn't show on this chart. We have office locations in Juneau, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Dillingham, Kotzebue, Nome, and Bethel. Those four are CNRA, our responsibilities through Community and Regional Affairs. Kodiak has a one-person office, which is staffed by an ASME employee, and Seattle office of ASME currently, but it is scheduled to close by the end of this fiscal year, those positions, and the office has been relocated at initiative from the legislature back to Juneau. We've included this slide in the next to reorient the members to the department's overall budget and give some context to the changes that are proposed. This chart shows the response to the drop in oil revenue that began in calendar year 14. First column shows the budget that has appeared in its summer of 14, which was fiscal year 2015. The budget total then was $215 million, and we had 585 positions. Since then, we've seen federal funds, the light gray at the top, remained fairly steady. Other funds in the blue, we've seen a drop of tourism marketing funding of $2.73 million in revised cost estimates in AGDC, $1 million in AEA rural energy receipts, and $2 million in ADA receipts. On the designated general funds, which is the yellow, they're fairly level if you subtract the $55 million reinsurance program in the FY17 column, and in that year, the appropriation was included in department to start the reinsurance program, which has been a very successful. And it makes sense that that's stable. That's because it consists of licensing fees and others, including PCE and revolving loan funds. And that runs in stark contrast to the dark gray at the bottom. That's UGF, which is the core of the fiscal situation at and budget crisis, or UGF funds. Our department has seen a 75% reduction in that area in the last 3 years, from a little over $40 million to about $10 million, which is a 75% reduction. But if you compare it to apples to apples, I guess, excluding tourism funding of 15.2 and ASME funding of 7.4, the department budget in UGF funds has dropped from 17.9 to 10 million, which is still a 44% decrease. Total department budget in all funds has shrunk from 215 to 166.8 in FY19, a 48.5 million reduction. The number of employed positions has declined by 80, from 585 to 505, which is reflected on this next slide, and it shows the positions that were deleted and also positions that were included as part of our responsibility. The one position in banking and securities is an ask for an increment in the budget this year, and that's because of our responsibility. ANCSA corporations are not governed and don't have oversight by the SEC, and we need to do a better job of overseeing them, because it's starting to creep into, we're seeing more and more proxy and other issues that are coming up in those corporations, and it's taking up time from our other responsibilities in banking and securities. Corporation business and professional licensing, an increase of 7 position in the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office associated with regulating marijuana has grown by 8 positions. I'm going to hand it off very quickly to Director Reardon, but I want to point out a couple of things. In the 17 and 18 session, the legislature appropriated $110 million to the Alaska Reinsurance Program to stabilize Alaskans' health insurance rate, and that's reflected in the green bar in FY17, and also the blue and yellow bars in 18. The yellow bar in FY18 is funds that were appropriated but not spent in the previous year, and it rolled over. It's double counting. If you deduct that, then you can see it decline within our department. And I think at this point I'm going to turn it over to Catherine Reardon. As I said, I've been learning about my department's budget, and I appreciate Catherine and Hannah's tutoring in that regard, and I'll have her address the next slides.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. Let me just move this a little bit. Okay, this chart shows the department's total general funds, and as you know, that includes both UGF and DGF, and as the commissioner described, UGF is now a very small percentage of our department budget, and 6% of our department budget, and it's 1/7 of the bar now for 19 that you're looking at. Imagine that most of what's being shown on this chart, at least in 19, is DGF, which would mean license fees. Also, PCE is in here, PCE payments, which is always something important to realize when you're looking at our numbers. It's about $32 million of PCE payments in that 19 number and in the previous numbers, which you might not think of as a DGF expenditure, but that's the money going to the utilities. Department's UGF, as just mentioned, has decreased a great deal since 15, and I don't want to duplicate. I just realized I was going to duplicate something he was saying. So it's generally special projects or different initiatives and focuses that account for the ups and downs over this 10-year period. They were described well along the left-hand side by the Division of Legislative Finance, and we added the green, blue, and yellow shading there to show the reinsurance fund. If you took that off, you could see a pretty straight line decline from FY14 management plan to 19, which I think reflects what's been going on in our budget as we contract back as necessary.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. I know that UGF has decreased substantially at the department. I just can't. Maybe it's too small for me to see where on the chart. Is that on this chart? I can't see where on this chart is. I know that total general funds are here.
Through the chair, this chart combines UGF and DGF. You can't see the difference because it's all the category of GF. And so the point I was trying to make is most of what you're seeing there is DGF, not UGF. The chart that the commissioner showed, slide four, shows you that yellow versus gray breakdown.
I'm sorry. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Oops. Okay, moving on to this legislative finance chart. This is showing all funds now. You can by line item, and you can see where some changes have occurred over the past decade. While there's some personal services growth, most of that's attributable to the cost of living increases for employees and those basic costs of doing business. Overall, as mentioned, the department's position count is down from 516 full-time positions in 2008 to 500 plus five non-perms in 2019, and the growth that there has been in fee-supported areas, which we have licensing fees to support in general, as described by Commissioner Navarre. The changes in the contractual line, the salmon-colored bar, and the grants line, the light yellow bar, really reflect changing duties assigned to the department. The largest item in the 2019 budget in the grants line is power cost equalization payments, such as I described, which was $26.7 million in 2009 and is now $32.4 million. Another significant item in the grants line is revenue sharing, which in this context means National Forest receipts, PILT, fisheries tax programs, which money that we distribute from those sources. And then we see again the reinsurance program having its effect on the chart.
Chairman, I just also want to reinforce the distinction between UGF and DGF and the changes that have happened since 2008, where entities have come and asked the legislature to be regulated. The legislature has approved it, and they've agreed to pay for it in their licensing. Those are DGF monies, but the public doesn't make a distinction when they look at positions and jobs in state government. And we have looked at areas that we can find efficiencies, even though they're DGF funded. But we're also required by legislative audit to make sure that we cover the costs of those.
Thank you. This legislative finance chart, I think, works really well for a lot of departments. For our department, it can be overwhelming, at least to me, to look at due to the diversity of what our department does and the initiatives that come and go. I think what it clearly illustrates is that we have a lot of program changes and special projects over the years, that we're a dynamic agency with many different areas of expertise, and we get called upon to step forward at different times to respond to different needs and focuses in state government. I don't know how much you'd like to to have me talk through any of this. I'm suspecting that perhaps that would be good to move to individual questions afterwards. And this is all funds. The previous one was GF only, but it shows the same kind of picture with a kind of steady baseline of activity apparently volatile additions and subtractions on top, all of which have explanations if you'd like them.
Yeah. My suggestion was just to say they're self-explanatory and move on.
No.
That means you get to explain them in some
way. That explains it all.
So, pausing here. Now we've moved to the tables that the committee requested. The takeaway for me out of the tables that follow, the important points are that, as described, UGF is a very small portion of our department budget, and therefore when you're looking at the column that says percent of cost through fees, you will see the great majority of our programs or a substantial number of our programs saying 100% fee or fund supported or 98% or things like that. You can see that pattern in our department reflected throughout. The other is that Alaskans are touched in some way by the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development almost, you know, in every household. Finally, that we spent $10 million of UGF and we deposited into the general fund $27 million of UGF. So strictly looking at that way, we're a revenue generator. And that is without the insurance premium taxes being included, which would be a $55 to $60 million item likely in 19. Touching on just the executive administration, RDU, that's the Commissioner's Office and Admin Services. I would like to say that we have reduced those entities by 14 positions since FY15, as described on the slide 5 when the Commissioner was showing our additions and subtractions, and that included the deletion of a Deputy Commissioner and all administrative support in the Anchorage office for the Commissioner's office. We have been making a concerted effort to reduce our back office costs so we can focus our remaining funds on services, ideally in ways that are invisible to the public. But I do want to say that consolidating space and reducing our space costs has been a real effort during this administration. We have moved two agencies into our footprint on the ninth floor of the state office building in Juneau out of the community building in 15. That eliminated 7,000 square feet of space that we used for banking and DCRA and AMCO in the community building. In the beginning of 18, we moved the Division of Economic Development also onto our pre-existing footprint on the ninth floor. That eliminated about $250,000 a year lease. And reduced 8,000 square feet that our department had. So we've reduced 15,000 square feet just here in Juneau since FY15. We've also absorbed in Anchorage the entire AMCO operation into our existing space in Atwood rather than having to, you know, buy more. And in our Fairbanks office is in a much smaller lease than it was in FY14. So that's one of the types of efforts we're making to use our money well. Going to banking and securities, as you can see, it's all paid with fees. Commissioner Navarre mentioned the significant but not widely known function of banking in terms of regulating proxy-related filings from ANCSA corporations. These are filings from corporations and shareholder inquiries about proxies, and the filing reports, proxy solicitations, and statements are significant because they can be used, they can affect the outcome of board elections, management direction and ultimately financial profitability of these corporations. And so we need to, we did establish, the Division of Banking established a fee for these filings from ANCSA corporations, and in the 19 budget we're asking for permission to spend that fee on a position that will help us meet this statutory and community and civic responsibility. Here we have the Division of Community and Regional Affairs Division. We've tried to use these slides to also share information about what these agencies do because there are a lot of different functions in there. This division, as you can see along the top, has about $6.5 million of UGF in it, because for obvious reasons you can't have user fees for a lot of these services. Also, this is our constitutionally it has our constitutionally mandated functions in it. Title 10, Article 10 of the Constitution requires us, the state, to have an agency that provides services and support to local government and communities, and also the local boundary commission is a constitutionally mandated function. Corporations, business, and professional licensing. Yes.
So where you have the RDU revenue sharing, is that the community assistance program?
No,
we're not having the same
Mr. Chair, yes, many of us tend to refer to revenue sharing for community assistance program, but in the budget system, revenue sharing means the three items. I'm not good with the PowerPoint. The three items at the bottom of the slide there, payment in lieu of taxes, national forest receipts, and fisheries taxes, and you can see the amounts, the $10,600,000 and $3.1 million. Do I need to use my laser pointer?
No.
Okay. Community assistance payments are issued by our department, but they're appropriated by statute, and so you don't actually see that money in our budget. Corporations, business, and professional licensing. I think a lot of you probably, through your constituent contacts, are familiar with a lot of the professional licensing functions. We did list the 43 licensing programs there at the bottom of the slide. As the commissioner mentioned, the professional licensing side of this division is supposed to be a break-even by statute. We raise and lower fees by regulation with the goal of having each one of these licensing programs break even over time, with deficits and surpluses rolling forward, but without any excess spilling over into the general fund. That's per AS 0801065.
So under program support, that's indirect support. The bottom line there.
Oh, our note?
The program.
No,
$2.4 million in program support.
Just under investigations, there's program support. There's no cost allocation there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was not absorbing for a moment. We don't actually budget in most of these program units. We just budget at the RDU level. So we approximated how much staff works on these different functions to try to share information with you, but all of the costs of this RDU are covered by fees, whether it's the investigations as kind of a subset of professional licensing, and program support would also be where we would think of the division director. They have the accountants, they have maybe the front counter staff. In order to account for all the different, once we've broken down professional licensing and investigations, we have those remaining costs and we call them program support.
And they're 100%?
They're 100% covered. The distinction that's good to be aware of within this RDU is that professional licensing, those programs down at the bottom, and investigations would be a part of that. That is statutorily mandated to try to break even, as I described. Raise and lower fees if you're bringing in too much money, more than the costs, and raise them if the costs exceed revenue. However, business licensing and corporations, along the first program we've listed there, that doesn't have that break-even mandate. And so it, in fact, the business license fee is set by statute, and it does result in money for the general fund. In 17, that was almost $8 million of profit, as it were. Are there any?
We've also instituted a streamlining process for professional licensing in order to cut down on the turnaround time. It's initially applicable to medical and nursing licenses, but IT is helping to put together online so that we can process the information faster and apply it to the other professional licensing areas also.
And that's, as the commissioner said, that's not just for greater efficiency in our operation, but it's part of trying to facilitate private sector and economic development the faster that people can get to work or get new hires to work because they've got their license, the better for everyone.
And we have a quick question from President Ortiz and Representative Kawasaki.
Question around that efforts to increase the speed of licensing. You said, I think in passing, that that was primarily directed in the nursing industry. Is it also part of doctors, et cetera?
Yeah. The medical and nursing, that's where the initial focus is, with the idea that the efficiencies that we achieve can be applied across all of them.
Okay. And so can you just give a quick description as to what's being done to make it faster?
Well, we're doing online applications and actually getting to uniform information. And the time for processing those has been cut down already significantly, like from 6 months to under 30 days, and I think less than that, with the idea that we would get a much quicker turnaround time on those ones because of timing issues in that area specifically. But once we get that, I guess they're actually going through a process of making sure they focused on streamlining for those areas. But now, with the initial effort, a steering committee's been formed that includes IT and department personnel, including the commissioner's office, to streamline it further so that we can apply it across all of these license areas. And they're testing that, I think, next week is my recollection, to make sure that they get all the kinks worked out so that we can over time roll it out to all of the areas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, just a really quick question on the total positions are 93 and there's only 78 filled. Is there foregone revenue because those positions aren't filled?
Through the chair, no, Representative, there isn't in that. Because we are supposed to break even, not produce a profit, we don't have foregone revenue to the general fund. It will mean that if we spent less because we had vacancies, if we spent less licensing nurses because we had a vacancy there, it means that we will ultimately charge nurses less than we otherwise would to have their program cover its costs. And in fact, if it were in the corporations and business licensing side, we would spend less doing that, which would mean that there would be more profits spilling over to the general fund. So I think it actually, we don't like to have the vacancies because it is a very high volume division where keeping those licenses moving is of utmost importance to many Alaskan citizens. But so we're not deliberately doing that. That's a picture as of December 15th. There are times during the year when, you know, we have ups and downs and turnover.
Thank you.
Yep, keep going, Catherine. All right. Economic Development Division, we have two different RDUs, Economic Development and Investments, which is the revolving loan funds. I would say that It's worth noting that the economic development side of that has been has seen very substantial reductions since FY15. They've shrunk from 13 positions to just 5. Now we're holding steady in the 19 budget, but that's been a place where it was UGF funded. It's lost 64% of their UGF and lost more than half of their staff. And so they've been focusing on where they think they can make a difference. Part of that was the comprehensive economic development strategy that they worked on. Investments is entirely funded with the revolving loan funds themselves.
And Rep. Van Gren.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just a quick question. Hopefully you're the right person to ask. On the Made in Alaska, on the overseeing of that, who uses that, there's no fee for farmers and people to use the Made in Alaska logo or anything, is there?
Through the chair, Representative, the farmers do Alaska Grown usually, and that's operated by, I think, Division of Agriculture. We do the bear and the silver, the bear, the Made in Alaska bear with the little bear. And we do charge money for the stickers. They buy stickers. You know, people want to put them on all their products. And there is a fee for being in the program, but it's relatively small.
And
there are qualifications, yes.
Go ahead.
Division of Insurance, 100% fee funded, and we talked about the reinsurance program as well. And once again, those we broke out those programs. They're not really managed as separate programs. We were trying to describe the types of functions that go on in there, and we kind of just arrayed money as we think makes sense, but without a great deal of detail behind it. This is AMCO. We added to this slide the fee, the revenue that's come in from alcohol versus marijuana, because oftentimes legislators want to know. At this point, alcohol has been totally fee supported. Marijuana, as we kind of promised, is on a trajectory to a three-year process of getting off of UGF. First, we had no license fees, and we had expenses, and then we got licensees, and now they've started renewing. So we've gone from 100% UGF down to, in 19, 500 and some thousand, 532,000 of UGF, and by 20, you should see zero UGF.
I want to point out, if I could, in this one, that this is a division within the Department of Commerce, but the director, therefore, they're in the Department for Administrative Services. They were at one time in the Department of Revenue. They moved to the Department of Public Safety, and then they moved again to the Department of Commerce. And the director was hired by the administration, but works under the direction and answers to the Alcohol Board, Alcohol Beverage Control Board, and the Marijuana Control Board, not to the commissioner.
Here's one slide showing all of the allied corporations except for AMCO that got its own page. And you can see there's a variety of ranges in how fee supported they are. RCA is basically 100% funded. The 2% is IA. You've got Seafood Marketing, which now is off of UGF entirely. They do have some federal money. That's why it shows under only 78% fee funded. ADA has its receipts. One thing always when you're looking at ADA is to realize that AEA, Alaska Energy Authority, has no positions of its own, even though it uses positions. That all positions are housed within ADA. And so you have to sometimes look at those together when you're trying to figure out who's really cutting and where are costs really going. And then you can see the power cost equalization program. It's worth noting there that in the budget, that's an estimated to be number. It is maybe $5 million lower than last year, lower than FY18. But it's the actual formula that dictates how much will be paid out.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I might have missed it. Is there a listing for ASTI, Alaska Tourism Marketing Institute, are they here?
ATIA, through the chair. No, they're not, because our department no longer has responsibility or no longer grants funds to that agency in the operating budget.
Thank you.
Here are the five-year healthcare trends. As you can see at the bottom, our percent of healthcare is relatively small compared to some other departments. But to be fair, that is because we have some significant expenditures that have no personal services, no workers involved in them. For example, if we're giving out $32 million of PCE, you're not going to see healthcare costs associated with that, except for maybe the two or three employees, you know. So our percent is affected by the fact that we have these large non-employee related expenditures. It's all governed by what the cost is in the union, you know, in the worker contracts.
One question is that we're now at 5.6%. That's probably all UGF. And on slide 6, I think you said that the total percent of the budget is 6% UGF. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that almost all of your UGF goes to healthcare?
Mr. Chair, no, because the health insurance portion of employee cost is billed just like their salary to their funding source. So if you work for the division of if you work for professional licensing, it's professional licensing fees that are paying your health insurance. So it should match our funding sources. The federal government's getting billed if it's a federally funded position.
And does the department have business licenses as well?
Yes, yeah. Mr. Chair, that's in C, that's the B in corporations, business, and professional licensing. Yeah.
Not for professional licensing, for regular business licensing.
Yeah. Regular business licensing, yes, sir.
For the subcommittee, I'd like you to prepare an analysis of what the effect is now for the change that the legislature made so that you can have one business license and have multiple lines.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you'd have a professional license. All the other licenses can be combined, so people, instead of having four business licenses, now have one business license and one charge that can be doing five different businesses. So I would like you to prepare an analysis of how much money we are losing from that change that we made in statute for your
Okay.
So thank you.
Thank you.
We have a couple of quick questions, or we'll put them on the record and you can send them back to us. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Page 17, the RCA. I'm not going to ask you the usual broadband internet question, but this morning I was approached with a question that I was not prepared for. That was meeting with the power authority, the Alaska Power Authority groups. And they wanted the RCA funded at a higher level. And I said, well, that's up to you. If you decide to fund the RCA at a higher level, you just ask for increased fees. And the response I got back from that was the RCA budget goes through the department for review, and they can't add personnel unless the department approves the personnel or the increased budget. And I know it's all RSA. So do you actually review the RCA's budget, and or does the OMB and tell them that they can't expand services, or is that something that I need to address?
Through the chair, representative, in the budget process, the legislature tells RCA and the department how much RCA is permitted to spend, how much expenditure authority they have. Even though the cash is coming from fees, just like all our other divisions that are fee-funded, you all are collectively deciding how much can they spend. So they may have plenty of cash on hand, plenty of receipts, but they can still only spend $9 million. So if they want to spend $10 million, the legislature would have to increase their appropriation.
But I think the answer to that, and whether or not it's included in the budget as ask, is OMB-driven. It comes through our budget, but OMB makes that determination.
Mm-hmm.
Just like all of our okay. all of our.
So it is. So if I may follow up, Mr. Chair. So,
Representative Guttenberg.
I will take that up in the subcommittee.
Okay. Do that, but do...
Mm-hmm.
We need to move on to law. Thank you very much. High level, quick. Welcome, Attorney General. Would you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and go ahead and proceed? We'll try and make through as quickly as possible, so if we can try and make it out before 4:30.
Okay. I'm Attorney General Jonna Lindemuth from the Department of Law. Today I have Administrative Services Director Dan Spencer with me, as well as my two deputies, Ed Sniffen, who is the deputy for the Civil Division, and Rob Henderson, the deputy for the Criminal Division, along with our ledge liaison, Corey Mills. We also have with us Joanne Grace, who is currently the head of Opinion, Appeals, and Ethics, but in May will be taking over as the Civil Division Director when Steve DeVries retires. And so we wanted her to see what the budget process is. We thank the committee for inviting us to present. Now, last year when we were here, I spoke of the three core services that our general fund dollars go to: prosecuting crime, protecting children, and statehood defense and revenue protection. The message I had for the committee at that point was that we had cut too far in our department, and we were through the fat and down into bone. And at the end of last year's process, this committee gave us two more prosecutors, and I thank Rep. Gren for leading the efforts on that. But what we didn't know at that point in time is that crime has really risen in the last couple of years. And so the Uniform Crime Report came out this last summer, and it shows that, you know, while our department was facing significant cuts in between 14 and now, at the same time, crime was on a significant uptick. And it also was impacting our child protection cases. And so what really is the primary driver of both of those things that is really impacting our core services is the opioid epidemic. And so that's kind of the theme of what we're looking at for our department today. Now, the core mission is the department prosecutes crime and also provides legal services to state government. And so we represent all of the departments and agencies statewide except for the university and the railroad. We have two operating divisions, the Criminal Division and the Civil Division, as well as our Administrative Services Division. So it's very simply organized. Turning to our Civil Division, all of our 13 sections that we have really fall into four core services. As I mentioned before, protecting Alaska's safety and financial well-being, and a big part of that is child protection, but also, you know, adult protection. Commercial and fair business houses our consumer protection unit. Going down, we also have fostering conditions for responsible development for our resources. So natural resources section, transportation, environment. Going over to the piggy bank one, protecting the fiscal integrity of the state. Again, that's natural resources, but it's also our RAPA section, our labor and state affairs section, torts and workers' comp. And then finally, up in the upper right hand, promoting good governance. And so opinions, appeals, and ethics. A good focus of that section's work is for child protection appeals. That's the bulk of the work, the type of appeals that we do in that section. But we also have special litigation, labor and state affairs, and the other divisions that you see there. Now, in representing state agencies, our work falls into two types of work. One is litigation, which everyone understands, going to trial. And, you know, if the state gets sued, we're out defending claims. If the state has claims, we're out pursuing those claims. But the other really important piece of work that we do is transactional and advice-oriented. So the Department of Law represents all the other departments in making good decisions for the state. Now, in broad strokes, Civil Division is half funded by our GF dollars and half funded by interagency receipts from other departments. And the Civil Division's capacity has really been cut to the bone. So since FY14, the Civil Division is down 32% in its budget. Now, further cuts to the Civil Division will really impact child protection and our statehood defense revenue protection cases. In a nutshell, all of the cases in the upper left-hand corner and in the bottom right-hand corner account for about 75% of our GF dollars. Turning to the Criminal Division, unlike every other state, we don't have counties with elected DAs, and so the state in the Department of Law is the primary responsibility for prosecuting cases statewide. So other than Anchorage and Juneau, which have municipal prosecutors who prosecute misdemeanors, other than those two exceptions, we prosecute all felonies and misdemeanors statewide. We have 12 district attorney's office, along with our Office of Special Prosecution and Appeals sections, which are responsible for statewide matters. And our Criminal Division is 85.6% GF funded. The other amount accounts for some federal dollars that are for some specific federal programs. So say Medicaid fraud, that's federally funded. This next slide, slide five, is focused on our GF dollars and has a 10-year look back. So since FY14, our department is down 20% or $12.6 million, and it's down 26% since FY12. Now, as I mentioned before, the bulk of our GF dollars goes for criminal prosecution, civil, and child protection cases. And so at the same time that there's this downtrend, we've really seen an uptick in those kind of demand for those cases, both in criminal prosecutions and in child protection. For example, in our child protection cases since FY14, those are up 48%, but without the added staff to cover that. And so we're actually down two assistant attorney generals who handle those cases, and the caseloads for those matters has skyrocketed. Now, this next slide is the allocation of resources. And so this really is to illustrate that the bulk of our dollars, our funding, goes for personal services. Those are the attorneys and staff who are on the ground providing legal services to the state, whether in civil matters or in criminal matters. The purple is services, not personal services, but services. And so it's really contractual relationships that we have, that the department has. The bulk of that is outside counsel and experts, but that also covers leases and other contracts that the state has if another department is providing services to us that's included in that purple region. Now, that services bucket accounts for just over 20% of our budget. And there's been a 12.6% reduction since there's been a 48% reduction from FY12. What we really have focused on is bringing legal work in-house that was maybe previously done by outside counsel to help reduce that spend. our attorneys can work much cheaper on cases. We charge $165 an hour for an attorney, and if you use an outside counsel, it's, you know, $250 to $500, maybe more, depending on the expertise that they're providing. Now, we still have to use outside counsel occasionally for when there's something that requires an expertise that we don't have in-house, and especially if it's just a one-off case and we don't want to build that expertise in-house. Now, this slide focuses on our GF and breaks apart the civil, criminal, and administrative services divisions. And what you can see is that the red line, which is the civil division, has had the steepest decline. And I mentioned before that that was a 34% decline, or 32% decline since FY14. And then the criminal division is down 10.5% since FY14. Now, compared to other public service, public safety agencies, whether it's OPA or PD's office or even Department of Public Safety, Department of Law has suffered far greater cuts in that same time period than any of the other public safety departments. And so when you look at the governor's budget request, that's why a large focus of it is putting dollars back into Department of Law. Now, this slide looks at all funding for all of the for the department and breaks it out by civil division, criminal division, and administrative services over looking back 10 years. Now, turning to the next slide, slide 9, this slide again shows the source of funding. Now, the light blue is the GF, and that shows, you know, again, that it's the primary component of our budget. The red piece is the interagency receipts that we receive from other departments. And again, that's primarily driven to the civil division, which is half interagency receipt funded and half general fund dollars funded. The dark purple or blue that you see there in the middle is the small amount of designated GF, the DGF. And so that's a really small part of our budget, as well as the green, which is the federal receipts that the department has. Now, I will turn it over to Mr. Spencer to address the five-year healthcare trends in our department.
Mr. Chairman, Dan Spencer, Director of Administrative Services. The five-year healthcare trends are, again, as other departments, these are provided by the Office of Management and Budget. The you'll see that it's about a 60-40% split between UGF on the healthcare costs, the budgeted healthcare costs, and you'll also see that the bottom line is about 10.4% in FY19 governor as healthcare costs as a portion of the total budget, not just personal services. The next couple of slides, next several slides, Mr. Chairman, are a matrix that the committee has asked for. This was provided last year. It breaks the divisions down by the importance of the statutory responsibilities, the amount of budget, and the positions in each of the components in the budget. And that covers all of those up through the end of the report.
Thank you. At the end of the day, we're going to be comparing some of those healthcare costs and rewarding the healthiest department. So I'm just going to ask a question, and you can get back with me later. And this is policy, unfortunately, but here we have the so the RCA, the telecommunications definition of the RCA clearly includes broadband. So if you guys support the RCA with your legal opinions, could you tell me why they don't think it does? And I can take that outside. And
so through the chair, Representative Gattenberg, I don't have that answer for you today, but my deputy, Ed Sniffen, is very familiar with that section, and he's the person for you to talk to.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. In looking at the And looking at what we have in statements from you guys in terms of where you stand on personnel, one of the things that I we were able to dig up is that in terms of environmental law, that it seems like you guys feel that you have reduced pretty substantially there. Am I reading that correctly first?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, yes, we have reduced that section. That also is a section that's primarily funded through interagency receipts from DEC. And so if you look at their budget and they have to talk about what they want to spend on legal dollars, then that would affect the amount of work that the Department of Law does. Now, I would point out that a good portion of the work that we do for the Department of Environment Conservation brings dollars into the state, and so that's work that actually results in revenue for the state.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So, and also want to ask you about the initiative, the HB 199, that is also an initiative. What is the impact that you foresee for your budget? I know that there is a fiscal note that is from last year that's on the bill as it stood last year that had about $450,000, but that bill I think is different than now the initiative. Do you have an estimate in additional cost or personnel that you feel that you might need if that were to go forward?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, can you refresh my recollection on what 90, because I'm not very good at the numbers.
I apologize. It's the anadromous fish, the salmon, the one that's subsequently, there's an initiative that is also doing something similar.
Through the chair, I know that I looked at that information last year, but I'm not refreshed on that. So we can get back to you on that information outside of the committee process if that works.
And Mr.
And if you go ahead and send the committee, and we'll distribute to all members.
Okay.
Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you. And Mr. Chair, and obviously the clarification is, I know there's a bill that you'll have a fiscal note if it were to move through the process. Mm-hmm. Really, the concern is that the bill is different than the initiative. It is the initiative. I'm trying to make sure I understand the impacts to your department. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And it's interesting because an initiative, of course, doesn't come through and get scheduled for a committee hearing. Therefore, there's not a mm-hmm. fiscal note generated. So it's sometimes a difficult call. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The recently, the settlement on the TAPS tariff case, I know I'm always concerned when the industry can write their costs off against the tariffs. But do you have is there a paper that was written on the benefit to the state for that settlement?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, we put out a press release that detailed our thinking, just generally mm-hmm. overall broad thinking on it. You know, there's a number of benefits I see. Mm-hmm. One, the litigation is expensive, and we've been litigating this for many years, and it's one of those things that you know, as you mentioned, the industry was incentivized to fight everything because then they can just roll their litigation dollars into the rates going forward. The way we settled that, the main fight over that was whether they could include their strategic refrigeration costs in the rates. And the way we settled that is that none of those strategic refrigeration costs will be included in rates going forward. And so the rates are going to be significantly lower, resulting in additional tax and royalty dollars to the state going forward. And so we really see that as a win-win. We're estimating $165 million more in addition to the $200 million that we'd already collected over the prior years that had been paid. And so we solidified the $200 that was in the bank, and we're going to look at $165 million going forward. But in addition, we're providing certainty to the industry about what the tariff rates are going to be because we're setting up a methodology on how this is going to work and based on actuals that then can be audited. The benefit to that, the side benefit to that, is that we won't have to litigate every year and it will be a reduced litigation cost going forward as well. We'll have audit rights, but we won't have to go into litigation to audit the rates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just follow through. In the past, some of my concerns with those things with people that were working on this project didn't know the definitions or the physical parameters of what they were defining. And just being a person that moved that pipe and moved those flanges up north and knew how easy it was to manipulate the configurations to circumvent anything you were doing, I've always been concerned about that. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I guess I had a question. Just looking at the slide you have up there, it's unfortunate that they're compared to total budget, but in 2017 you had 9.1%, and so in FY19 proposal is for 1.3% more, or an increase of 14%. Some of that, of course, is in relationship to total budget, but you know, we're very concerned about the healthcare costs eating out your core services that you perform, because unless we're going to build in every year an increase to healthcare services, it doesn't matter. And so, you know, we've had this discussion before that we want to make sure that any ways in which we can avoid costs by avoiding health conditions is something we want to do, and we've had a talk about this, and hopefully we'll be moving forward in a direction that will have a healthier Alaska so we have less health care costs. And so, because I just cannot see us getting there very much through trying to just reduce payment schedules. I mean, it's a help, and just like changing the with the healthcare authority, if we can get $30 million here across, but when you cross that with all of the insurance pools, whether it, you know, including the school districts, municipalities, and that, all of a sudden that washes out as a smaller number compared to total healthcare dollars. So as we go forward, I want to have some more conversations, but appreciate you looking at those and avoiding costs. Is there anything else that anyone has for the Attorney General right now?
4:30.
Hey, guess what? You made it before 4:30.
Congratulations. Thank you. Thanks to the committee.
Thank you. And we will, this is the last of our budget overviews. And sorry that we were so rushed here by core session length of today, but next meeting will be third. Just make sure I didn't have it wrong. Thursday, February 1st at 1:30 p.m., and we will have Office of Management and Budget presentation on the new supplemental budget, HB 321. We'll also take up HB 287. Appropriation for education, student transportation, that's the early attempt to early fund education, and we'll also have that open for public testimony at that time. Is there anything further to come before the committee? Seeing nothing else from committee members, we will be adjourned at 4:30.